voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Well, Dr. Brown, always a pleasure to connect with you. I'm sure you know how I'm going to start this off today, right?
I do. Good morning, Melissa.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was in touch with somebody else at Griffin Health earlier this week, and I was like, what are your thoughts? And she's like, well, this just happened. And luckily, it, you know, Griffin hasn't really used, I shouldn't say luckily, because a lot of people have gotten the J&J, but Griffin doesn't really use the J&J. You guys have mostly been Pfizer and Moderna for your clinics. But I mean, what are your thoughts on the J&J pause?
Yeah, so this is, it's really interesting. And I think everyone just needs to, it's sort of interesting. I was reading an article last night about it, and, you know, I think we need to be really careful about, you know, overreading into this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I think that's the lesson learned. I think people need to just sort of take a step back and understand sort of what the concern is. So there was about 6 patients out of 6 million people who've actually gotten the vaccine already, 6 people who've actually developed a rare type of clot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not undermining. That's a pretty significant clot. But again, that number is, I think that number is you know, is very low.
Yeah.
So I think the you know, the federal government did the right thing.
Yeah.
And said, look, we're concerned about this, so let's put it on pause. And it's sort of the, I know we've heard this term a lot, in abundance of caution.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a pause. And I think they use the word pause because,
right,
I don't think this is going to stop the vaccination with J&J. I think it just gives us this extra opportunity to say, okay, what's going on? And, you know, we've talked about this a lot, Melissa, about, you know, about the research and a new vaccine. And again, this is not a new style of vaccine. The J&J vaccine is actually something that's, you know, not new, like the mRNA is newer in the vaccine world. This is not necessarily a new vaccine,
mm-hmm,
but we saw a complication. We monitored the complication. We saw the complication, and now we're taking a step in doing the analysis to say, is this, you know, is this a very rare cause of it, or is it truly unrelated?
You know what's interesting, Dr. Brown, is we keep hearing that this could potentially have a connection to birth control. Do you think that's a possibility, and why?
I do, and, you know, I know nothing about these patients. But we do know that smoking and birth control and certain types of genetic issues that people have, in particular females, they do have a higher predisposition to getting blood clots.
Mm.
So that is a risk factor. And anyone who goes on birth control, usually there's a discussion about, you know, the possibility of developing blood clots.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's definitely a possibility. Again, I can't say because I don't know these cases,
right,
in particular, but there's always a risk factor, and those two are always big risk factors. One is you know, birth control, and the other one is smoking.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brown, could you maybe speak to clinical trials? I know a lot of people immediately, especially if you're an anti-vaxxer, people immediately go, well, why wasn't this caught in clinical trials? And I could be totally wrong, but I had said, look, when you look at clinical trials, honestly, for every single one of these vaccines, you're looking at a few thousand people, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people looked at. But then when you administer 7 million shots,
correct,
you know, now you're looking at, okay, 6 out of 7 million, like, you know, things will come up after clinical trials. That doesn't mean they shouldn't get FDA approval, correct? I mean,
that's exactly right. And,
okay.
And honestly, I think you can look at, you know, 100,000 people that get tested to do the right demographic, a combination, the appropriate monitoring. Statistically, you can analyze them. And again, there's a lot of statistics around this. There's a lot of ability to determine how many people need to receive the vaccine or how many people need to receive a control vaccine to determine if it's truly efficacious, if it truly works, and if there's any true side effects associated with it. And again, this goes from, you know, laboratory bench research to animal studies, then to humans. And the first trial is it safe in humans? It's not really, does it work? It's,
mm-hmm,
is it safe?
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, all right, does it work?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of pieces, and you are absolutely correct. You know, a 0.1% chance of something happening becomes apparent when you have millions of people who are actually getting it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just deals with the statistics. Now, the question is that, you have that many people who are actually just out there in the world, is this something that was happening, going to happen anyways?
Yeah. I mean, and the only thing that we do know about these cases, Dr. Brown, is the fact that you've got women. Mm-hmm. They're young, relatively young. And I'm curious, you know, do you think that I think the thing that shocks people is the fact that, okay, now all of a sudden within 1 to 2 weeks after getting the J&J, we've got six cases. We don't even know where they are. We just know there's six cases in the U.S. Mm-hmm. One is in Nebraska, but that's literally all we know. Do you think it's because we just started opening up the eligibility for younger demos across the country, like not just here in Connecticut, but like across the country? Do you think that's why we might be seeing the reaction of the J&J? Because to me, I think it's shocking that we've had 7 million doses, more than that, distributed across the country, but we've never seen any kind of clotting issue with this. I know AstraZeneca's had some issues overseas, but like we won't approve it here. So I'm just curious if you think, you know, that might be a factor is age, you know, because we just started opening it up to younger demos very recently.
You know, I always am a little hesitant to say.
Okay. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I was just curious.
Where we are.
Yeah.
So the answer is that, I mean, yes, of course. I mean, different age and different demographics are going to have different risk factors for receiving any medication. You know, some people receive medication or not even medication, over the counter. Mm-hmm. You know, certain people, end up having, you know, drinking alcohol and they get flushed and, you know, because they don't have a certain enzyme to break it down. You know, those are the things that are actually happen every time you go into a different demographic. We are very complex organisms, and we have a lot of nuances associated with them. So yes, you know, going into a different bracket could potentially show these rare occurrences. So I can't say that's not the case. What I could say is that again, we've seen this. I mean, J&J is not just started here. It's been, you know, across the world. And, you know, there has been some clotting and some other issues that have been seen. But again, they're rare, and I would consider this rare.
Okay. Dr. Brown, we do have a couple listener questions, and then I also wanted to talk about a recent study that was just published this week. There was a study that came out this week, Dr. Brown, that I actually personally was very curious about. You and I have talked about long haulers before, younger, pretty healthy people who, after they contract COVID, have kind of neurological short-term issues following COVID. And we've known about the neurological part, but what I thought was interesting about this study was it said 1 in 3 COVID survivors are showing also psychological issue. And what I found interesting was it was saying a little more than 17% of patients were diagnosed with anxiety, 14% diagnosed with some sort of mood disorder. Now, I already shared with the audience, only because I was very intrigued by this. Ironically enough, last weekend, my husband brought it up to me. He was like, I don't know what's going on with you, but in the last couple of months, you've been down more, not depressed, because there's really nothing going on in my life that's bad. In fact, there's more good than there is bad, other than the news. Like I've been very unmotivated, down, and I couldn't tell you where that's coming from. And I feel like, other than, you know, when I'm busy at work or busy raising my kid or busy doing housework, on the weekends when I'm doing nothing, it's very, very apparent that I'm kind of in these like unmotivated downs, if you will.
Yeah.
And I've never, ever, 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 ever been like that. I've never been like that in my life. I've always been very upbeat, always very positive, and I still am. But we've noticed it, ironically enough, in the last few months, and I contracted COVID the end of November, beginning of December. What do you know about this? Are we seeing this in patients? Is it going to go away because I'm really sick of it? What could you tell us?
So yes, I think you and I spoke about this off air, that about a third of people who have actually had COVID-19 will develop some sort of neurologic or psychiatric illness. A third, 1 in 3.
Yeah.
So, and again, that could be any mild to major illness. So I can give you theory on this. And theory is that this virus, you know, is a virus that attacks, becomes very similar to the flu, where you end up getting your symptoms and you end up getting sick from it. But it does something different that other viruses don't do, or at least it's more pronounced in this virus, is it actually activates the immune system. And a lot of the complications that we've been dealing with patients and the deaths have actually been secondary to this immune response. If you remember early on, we talked about something called cytokine storm.
Mm-hmm.
Where people would end up getting sick, and then it seemed like they were getting a little bit better. Then all of a sudden, it was seven to ten days after mm-hmm. they had had the illness, they weren't getting better, and then all of a sudden they just got really sick.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of people passed from this cytokine storm. So it is actually, there's enough research that shows that if you're messing around with your immune system a little bit, like this organism does, having bouts of being down or blue, or even having some neurologic issues is not all that surprising. So the good news is that the majority of these go away. It takes a little bit of time, but they do go away. The good news is that the vaccine seems to help resolve it.
Okay.
There are definitely some studies that have shown that getting the vaccine after you've had COVID will help with the long haul syndrome. So there's definitely hope. So again, I think you will feel better. It'll take time. Everybody being locked in and it being cold and wet winter
mm-hmm.
has not helped.
Sure.
I imagine you'd be surprised how much just the transition to true spring and summer should really help a lot of people.
I hope so, because I really like. It's interesting. I mean, from a news person perspective, and just like talking, over the last 10 years and learning more about things like depression and anxiety and things like that. Like my sister, who's diagnosed with anxiety, and I have family members, friends who have depression. I feel like I've gotten just a glimpse of it, just going through
right.
whatever the heck I'm going through. But it's like it really is draining. Like I sit here and I'm like, I have no idea why I feel this way. This is so frustrating. Like go away, it won't
yeah.
go away.
I've dealt with that quite a bit in my career, given sort of the different infectious diseases that can
mm-hmm.
lead to this type of secondary effect.
Mm-hmm.
It may be hard, but eating right, exercising become really important. And then taking time for yourself. And it's funny because I've actually even advised people, I'm like, listen, if sitting in the hot tub makes you feel better, do that.
There you go. Yeah.
Getting a massage, those sort of things, you need to take some time for yourself. They
mm-hmm.
they really do help.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm just going to have to call my husband and make sure that we book more massages. That's what you told me to do. So that's what I'm going to do. Dr. Brown, I did get a couple of questions actually from a healthcare worker who had a question in regards to, I think it's more of like transmission of COVID. I think especially as we see more of these different versions kind of coming out, these variants, they had a couple of questions really quick. One was, as it gets to be warmer outside, especially with females, you start to see more people in shorter shorts, shorter tank tops, maybe bathing suits, so on and so forth. And they were worried about exposure of skin, and if that's going to have any kind of, is that an over precaution or does that not really matter as long as you're wearing a mask?
That's an over precaution.
Over precaution.
The CDC actually came out about 2 weeks ago saying that it's very unlikely that COVID-19 is spread by surfaces.
Okay.
Doesn't mean you don't have to be careful, but yeah. So anything you think about in relation to touch is probably not as important for COVID-19. Really important in the flu, but not as important in COVID-19. It really has to be a closed droplet to droplet transition. So someone has to have it, has to be in close proximity to another person and spread it. And that's why we see a lot of times this sort of occurs in families and family groups who are
mm-hmm.
really close.
Okay. And then the other question before I let you go, people who are going to either a doctor's office, whether it's going to get a COVID test or they're just going for a checkup or whatever the case may be. And I've noticed this too. I will say I've noticed this as well. Clipboards. I noticed that maybe the pens are sanitized and you'll see like the used versus the brand new pens or whatever, but clipboards very often are not sanitized. Is that something people should be worried about? Or again, is it skin on skin contact is really not a big deal?
It really has to be that close contact. We've seen this quite a bit in the hospital, even in the outpatient, that it's not the surfaces. But what I always recommend, and this is sort of an interesting thing because you're thinking around the same lines as what we think about in the hospital, keyboards and clipboards and everything else. I mean, we're always trying to prevent the spread of any type of infectious disease in a hospital or any
right.
healthcare settings because we have people who are at higher risk.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is it's really important to wash your hands. So if you see the Purell dispenser, hit the Purell dispenser.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the alcohol dispenser, wash your hands. That's probably the best thing you can do. Okay. But the direct contact to immediately get it and then go is probably is really less of a concern for me as it is for that really skin on skin and again making sure that you wash your hands.
Yeah.
And then Melissa, let me put in just another plug too. Is that you know given sort of everything that's been going on with COVID-19 in the community, we are still seeing younger people who are getting infected. We've actually had some patients in their 40s who've actually died in our ICU. It's really important that we encourage people, even though you hear about sort of the, you know, the pause in the J&J and, you know, these other things. These things are rare occurrences, but people are still dying from COVID-19. So it's really important for people to get vaccinated. People who get vaccinated, you know, it's a game changer.
I'm telling you, Dr. Brown, you and I really need to start our own, like, advertisement of, I always say, know the facts and get the vax. That's my, like, go-to.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Don't you like that?
I do. I love it.
I'm telling you, we should launch something together. I'd be totally down. It'd be really
Absolutely.
Cool. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to do that. Dr. Brown, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Melissa. Have a good day.
You too.